Welcome to episode 248 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us. Today's episode is all about participation. We're finding out about the Women's World Snow Sports Summit, looking at a new project to help first-time skiers, and learning about plans to reopen one of the UK's most iconic dry ski slopes. Now, my name is Ian Martin, and it's a pleasure to welcome my guest today. Joining me for the second time after episode 229, when she was discussing her research about female participation in skiing,
is Kim Kay. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you. Good to be here.
And whereabouts are you today, Kim?
I'm actually in Sheffield, sunny Sheffield this morning, but it's probably not going to be sunny for long. There's got a lot of rain forecast.
Well, as our listeners will discover later, that is very apposite that you're in Sheffield, but we'll come to that in due course. My second guest on the show is a regular guest. Regular listeners will know his voice well. I had a look back. I think he's probably been on the show at least eight times as far as I can work out. It is the COO of the Ski Club of Great Britain, James Gambrill. Hi, James. How are you?
Morning, Ian. Very well. Great to be back for time number eight or nine then, whichever it is.
And whereabouts are you today, James?
I am in a decidedly not very sunny Cornwall. It has been sunny. It's decided to rain today, and I think we've got 50-mile-an-hour winds forecast. So a perfect day to be doing a podcast, I think.
Okay, well, I appreciate you taking a bit of time out of your presumably half-term vacation to join us today. But if it's getting away from the rain, then maybe it's a little bit better. Maybe I can take you both back slightly, because a question that I always like to ask my guests is when you were skiing or snowboarding last. When was that for you, Kim?
It was actually 26th of April. That was my last day of the season. So skiing in Austria on the Kitzsteinhorn Glacier.
And how were conditions then?
It was actually surprisingly good. I was surprised how good the snow was. And there was a lot that was open. And I even got a dusting of a bit of bouncy new powder. So it was magic.
Cool. And that's above Caprun. And we'll come back to why you were in Caprun later on. What about yourself, James? When were you last out on snow?
So I guess my technical last time on snow was a couple of weeks ago at the Hemel Snow Centre for the ski club's big ski, which was our end of season party. So we had, again, some regular guests on the show. Shemi was there. We had Warren Smith there, and we had the whole slope as an end of season party for members, which was great. But my last proper time on snow, last day of the season for me, I was very lucky. I was in Snowmass in Colorado. Out there for Mountain Travel Symposium, which I think, as you know, Ian, is a big trade event. So people from all over the world meeting to discuss the season gone. And we had 2 weeks of spring skiing conditions. And then on Good Friday, our last day of the season, it snowed 30 centimetres and winter returned with a vengeance. So, yeah, it was a pretty much the best last day of the season I think I've ever had. It was quite special.
That sounds fantastic. And I'm guessing by the last day, you'd done all your meetings, you'd you know, done all your deals, and you're able to get a full day on the hill, were you?
Absolutely. Good Friday. So it wasn't a working day. And out there with lots of friends and colleagues from the industry. The funny thing was, they'd obviously been setting up for the end of season, and it had been very spring-like. So they had a pond skim set up and sort of hot tubs and DJ booths and everything. And of course, it was minus five and snowing. So none of that was happening. But I don't think anyone was going to complain when you get that sort of snow on the last day.
Were you going to try the pond skim? I've seen lots of photos and videos of these things.
Not at minus four, I definitely wasn't. Possibly if it had been plus 20, I might have given it a go. But there was proper skiing to be had. So it was an amazing day. And then I think the mountain closed on the Saturday, and it closed with, again, you know, a good 2 meter depth of base. So they've had a good winter.
Oh, and what's the resort like in general? How would you kind of summarize it?
So I mean, if you haven't been there, the interesting thing is it's obviously branded as Aspen Snowmass, but it is very much two separate resorts, about a 15-minute drive between Aspen Town and Snowmass. And Snowmass is very much a sort of, you know, modern North American purpose-built resort. So, you know, reasonably attractive, lots of kind of ski in, ski out accommodation, and a big mountain. And then Aspen, of course, is the famous old town. You do still have a mountain, Aspen Mountain, which is, you know, looms right out of the town. So you can stay in Aspen and walk to the skiing. But then you've also got Aspen Highlands and Buttermilk. So you've got four mountains to choose from. So either is a great base, and you can just take your pick of the mountains. And, you know, it's up at, I think Aspen Town is 2,520 meters. So if you're looking for a fairly safe bet for end of season, it's probably pretty high on the list.
Sure. Well, it's definitely on my list of places to go to, the ever expanding bucket list. So interesting, James, that you said you were skiing in Hemel Hempstead. I will be skiing there shortly myself. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. Today we're talking on Tuesday the 27th, but I'm not going to publish this episode until Friday the 30th of May. So there's a good chance, listener, that while you're listening to this, I will be right in the middle of my 25 in 25 snow camp challenge. Now, you might recall, listeners, if you've been on previous episodes, I'm traveling to all five of the UK's indoor snow centres in a single day, skiing with a minimum of 10 runs in each. So that's in order of the way I hope to tackle them. Tamworth Snow Dome, Chill Factory in Manchester, Snow Zone Yorkshire in Castlewood, Snow Zone Milton Keynes, and finishing off at Hemel Hempstead, all on the same day. It'll probably be quite a long and tiring day. I'm doing it partly because it seems like a fun idea, but mainly because I'm trying to raise £2,500 so that the Snow Sports Charity Snow Camp can give 25 inner-city young people the chance to experience snow sports for the first time. James, I imagine you've come across a snow camp before. You've probably done a bunch of work with them. Is that right?
Yeah, we work very closely with snow camp. And I remember doing a similar challenge with them many years ago, Ian. I think they used to run it as a kind of rally around. But back then, you only did one run on each slope. And my memory is the hardest bit was having to carry your skis and put your boots on to do one run and then off you go. But you're doing an electric car as well, which adds another level, right? We didn't do it back then. I don't think there were electric cars back then. So that adds another, you know, another kind of bit of planning and logistics to the feat.
Sure. I'm doing all the driving myself. And yeah, it is in a REV and I have done my planning, but I have noticed that there is, I've got a Tesla 3, a Tesla supercharger right next to Chill Factory, which I'm hoping is going to make the logistics of it very straightforward. Kim, have you had any contact with Snow Camp?
I have, yeah. I was actually opposite them when I exhibited at the Birmingham at Snow Show a couple of years ago, but I'd like to pledge £100 to your fundraising efforts.
Wow, that is extremely generous of you. That's very kind of you. And listen, I'm going to put a link to Snow Camp in the show notes so you can find out more about them. And it is a great project. And if you'd like to support them, then I would really appreciate it. About kind of sort of halfway to the target at the moment. I'd like to thank, you know, various people who've given since I recorded the last episode. They include Jim M, James B, Joe DLC, Neil B, Rick M, Talia, Rogers, Joe Parsons, Maura Watson, David P, Louise H, all donated since the last podcast. I'll put a link to Just Giving page in the show notes. It'll take a minute of your time. Any donation at any size would be amazing. And Kim, that is extremely generous of you. Thank you very much. Now, in the UK, you can only ski indoors at the moment, although there was a tiny bit of snow on Glencoe earlier this week, but not enough to ski on unless you were really, really keen and had the skis you don't mind trashing. In the Alps, they are still skiing and laid us out. So let's hear what conditions are like from regular snow reporter Alex Armand from Tip Top Ski Coaching.
Hi, this is Alex from Tip Top Ski Coaching with an update on the snow conditions from Lader's Alp. As you know, we're still skiing in Lader's Alp and skiing all the way through till the beginning of July. At the moment, we're still skiing from 3,400 metres all the way down the signal and then all the way down to 2,600 metres, so the midpoint of the resort. The snow's still really good. The new Gendre Express is amazing. There are never any queues. You're up from the village to the glacier in 17 minutes. And the new T-bar that laps around the park makes it possible to do twice as many park runs in a morning on the glacier. The park is in super condition. The pistes are in amazing condition. And skiing is an absolute pleasure. It's warming up day by day. So not only do we ski in the morning, but we've got lots of activities, walking, biking, etc. to do in the afternoons and just up. So hopefully we'll see you soon for a final ski of this 2025 season.
If you listen to our Ski Jobs special episode 246, you'll have heard Charlie Owen from SBIT, Seasonal Businesses and Travel, talking about the Youth Mobility Scheme. Now, he suggested there would be an announcement at the recent UK-EU summit, and so there was. There's no details yet, but the concept of a Youth Experience Scheme, as it's going to be known, no mobility, don't want to scare off reform voters, it's going to come into play probably for the 26-27 winter. There's no details yet, but what it will mean is that young British people will no longer need a visa or be limited to 90 days when going to Europe. So we will keep you posted on that. And that is definitely good news for the industry and young people who want to go and do ski seasons. Right. Regular listeners will know in the last year, the Ski Podcast has sponsored Team Carrick Smith. Now, specifically, that means Luca, Zach and Freddie, the three Carrick Smith brothers. They are aged 20, 18 and 18 because Zach and Freddie are twins. And they have just finished a fantastic first season as seniors. I caught up with them last week. So let's have a listen to that to see how their season went. I'm delighted to be joined today by Team Carrick Smith, and regular listeners will know three brothers racing for Team GB have had a great season. With me today, I've got Luca, Zach and Freddie. You've all had, you know, great seasons with different results. So I'll start with you, Luca. Just tell us, where are you at the moment?
We're surfing in an island called Sumbawa, which is like deep inside Indonesia. So we're sort of doing a road trip just around the islands and island hopping, basically. Yeah, training and surfing, basically.
Today, we're going to talk about skiing and how your seasons went. Luca, just so listeners understand, you're the older of the eldest of the three brothers. I think you're 20 now, is that right?
Yeah, 20. Yeah.
So still very much at the start of your career, really. I mean, I've interviewed various people like Dave Riding before, who people will know is one of the oldest skiers competitively on the circuit. I think he's still going to be keeping going. He might be 37 now, so you could have a very long career in front of you. I was looking at the FIS records a little bit earlier, and I noted and reported on it before that you came third at the Junior World Ski Championships. Was that the highlight for you of this season?
Yeah, I think so. It was quite a tough season, a lot of up and downs, especially towards the start. I really struggled with depression and stress and just coming back from it all. Towards the last third of the season, I really tried to focus on just performing and skiing well. And in the end, it all sort of came together for the last couple of races, and that's quite exciting.
Hey, look, I'm very fantastic that you, you know, won a medal at that event there. You mentioned, you know, the difficulties of the season. Is that related to kind of overcoming injury? Because, you know, as an athlete, it must be very hard if you are dealing with injuries.
Not so bad. I had a little bit of a few injuries on my ankle. It's more like loss of, not motivation, but loss of focus and what the track that I was going to take was going to be. And not sure at the start of the season, not sure whether I wanted to do it or not. And then halfway through the season, I just decided that this is what I'm going to do, and I knuckled down, trained, and the last 3 weeks of racing all came together.
Well, it's such a commitment. You know, it really is all in, and, you know, I totally get why you guys are taking a holiday right now after the intensity of the winter. Zach, I'm going to move on to you, if that's okay. And listeners may know that yourself and Freddie are twins, so you're competing against each other, you know, throughout your whole career. You're often competing direct at races, but you both had very successful seasons this year. You picked up a bronze at the European Youth Olympics Festival. And a gold at the National Junior Championships, I think. Were they your highlights?
Like, in terms of like high results and good skiing, yeah, for sure. I think the European Youth Olympics was probably my highlight. And then towards the end of the season, the British National Junior Championship GS. That was pretty good. There's a couple of the smaller races that maybe they're not as, you know, big events, like fist races here and there. Like, they meant more to me because obviously I had surgery in my knee in October, so I missed 4 months of like proper training, and then like the first month or so I was getting back into it, but I still had like not the results I was wanting, obviously, because I'd missed a lot of training. Then there was this one fist race with kind of me and Dad, went to the middle of nowhere in Austria just because, you know, I wanted to get racing, and I was stunned. Well, I was enjoying my racing, basically not really expecting anything of it, and I won it and made a 23, which I really did not think after my surgery I'd get 23 points this season. So I say that was probably the highlight. And then after that, it was like a good, strong end of the season.
It's all about context, isn't it? Yeah, and the context of that race, it meant a lot more to you. I wonder if you could just explain that. You talk about you got 23 fist points. Yeah, ultimately, your fist points are, you know, really important to you because they determine your starting positions and things like that. And it's almost, I wonder if you just explain to the listeners what that really means, because you want to be as low as possible for points, is that right?
Yeah, the lower the better, obviously, and whoever's on zero is basically the best in the world. Like, I try not to focus on points when I'm skiing, because like it's quite easy as us skiers to just get carried away and like you're winning the first round or whatever. All you can think about is getting those points. So the more like the less you think about points, that's why that one race was amazing, because I did not think about points at all. I just went out and I skied my best. Yeah, it worked out. Obviously, 22-23s is amazing because it gets you, I think at the moment it gets you in the top 150 in the world, which lowers your ranking in Europa Cup, and it can get your World Cup start for GB.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed for that. That's a really interesting insight.
Do you mind if I just add one more thing?
Well, juniors, that was probably one of my highlights too. Even though in the GS, I crashed into the net, and then in slalom, I missed the last gate. So that was a bummer. But just like I stood at the bottom after that race, and I've never been, well, I have been as happy for other races that I've done. But it was just quite cool to watch both Luca and Freddie do so well.
Wow, that's really interesting that you say that. I was going to turn to Freddie next, if that's okay. Because all three of you, picked up podiums and wins. You had a couple of, would be big wins for you this season. There was a gold in the European Youth Olympics Festival GS. And then, am I right in saying you also won the National Championships GS?
Yeah, I guess those were some of my highlights. Definitely the GS and the Youth Olympics. It was amazing. Super happy. I didn't get to go the year before, so that was amazing. And then also, the GS National Champs in Bormio, the British, which was amazing because, I got my best points there. So those were definitely my two best races. But also, the World Juniors were also some of my best races. Just best skiing. And I was super happy.
And I think I'm right in saying that I know you don't want to focus necessarily just on fist points, but you have gone into the top 100 in the world now in GS. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'm super happy with that going into next season.
And, you both race, maybe all three of you race slalom and GS, but certainly yourself and Zach race slalom and GS. Do you find yourself, because you've had that success in GS, thinking, this is more my discipline now, or is it everything?
No, it's definitely slalom and GS. I love slalom as well. Hopefully next year, me and Zach and possibly Luca might do a few more Super Gs.
Right. Okay. That'd be interesting. Yeah. Moving up to the speed side of things.
Yeah, I mean, Zach did two really good Super Gs in British, and I had one decent result, so possibly next season.
And I was looking through your results as well, and this might not relate to you, Freddie. I have to apologise. So someone else can step in if that's right. But I think you took part in the Italian Championships as well, and you guys did pretty well there.
Yeah, so Luca did amazingly there. Well, he got his 20 there, so that was amazing. I had a few really good results, so I'm super happy with those. Those were just before the British, so it was nice warming up in Pozzo and then going over to the British.
So Luca, you turned up to the Italian Championships, is that right, and pulled off a good result there?
It was in positive facet. It was a slalom national champs. So, 3 weeks from the end of the season, when I got my World Junior Champs bronze, I ended up scoring 18 points, which was quite handy. But to lower my ranking more, I also had to score another 20. So that was the goal. And I showed up to this national champs in Pozzo and scored a 20, which was quite handy. But yeah, that was pretty
well,
good.
Well, your world ranking is maybe into the 70s now. Is that right?
I believe it's 70, late 70s, maybe.
That's great. That's really good to hear. Do you want to give me an idea, Zach, what your plans are for this summer? Because you're taking a little break at the moment. When will you be back in France and back on snow again?
We're here in Sumbawa for another week, I think, in Indonesia. And then we take a few days to drive all the way back down. It's an 8-hour drive back to where we were, where we hired a car. Then I think we're flying back on the 1st. I'm going to have a couple of days in France just to get some kit sorted. Our plans are still changing, obviously, because we're supposed to go to Fauna in Norway like we do every year. But there's something to do with them maybe going bankrupt. So they're actually closed for the summer. So that's changed our plans quite a bit. So I'm guessing we'll probably be going to Les Deux Alpes first.
I wonder if I could also ask you, I recently interviewed Molly Butler, who's had a great season as well. And she's part of your training group. She told me how you challenge each other. And she was also talking about some of the tough sessions, beasting on the bike. Is that something you'll be working on, building up that endurance and doing those tough bike sessions through the summer months?
Yeah, for sure. She's actually here with us now.
Is that right?
Yeah, she's been surfing quite a bit with us too. Yeah, for sure. I've had quite a few hard bike sessions with her personal trainer in the UK when I come to visit. And she's definitely not working hard. Yeah, and whilst we're out here, we're also holiday / fitness training camp, trying to find as many gyms as possible. And I did a bit of testing in the summer where my strength is pretty all right, but my aerobic still needs a bit of work. So I'll be working on that throughout the summer.
And Freddie, what about yourself? Do you enjoy that summer fitness aerobic training, or is that something you kind of dread?
No, I enjoy it. but I mostly just enjoy going to the gym. But it's good to get on the bike and in Tien, because there's a lot of good road biking routes, and also just running, super good. I do enjoy running as well.
You guys are based, is it in Cez or somewhere just below La Rosière is where you're based in France?
Yeah, just down from La Rosière, like half an hour down.
Yeah, so there's some fantastic cycling around there. Are you telling me that you cycle up to the Col de Lizaran and get a bit of high altitude cycling in?
Yeah, yeah, it's good. Well, when we're there, at least, could do a P79 to Italy, and mostly that one. It's good fun.
Excellent. That's great. I'd like to thank all of you. I'd like to congratulate all of you. You know, you've had a great season. I think the point to stress here that listeners, you know, you may not get is that at the ages of 18 and 20, it really is very early in your careers, and it takes a long time to build up that experience. And I think this was your first year on the Europa Cup circuit. And, you know, there are a few DNFs in there and stuff like that. You know, I know that you're learning the whole time. And I was looking at Dave Riding's, you know, FIS record before I interviewed him, and he had so many DNFs early on in his career. Yet, you know, many years later, you know, he's incredibly, unbelievably consistent. And so making, you know, that step, to me, it seems like it's gone extremely well with all of the results you've had this year. And I look forward to following it next winter. So enjoy the rest of your surfing. Have a break. Enjoy your time in Ladies Alp. And we look forward to catching up at some time before next season. Yeah.
Thank you so much. For
thanks so much. Thank you so much.
Right, let's turn our thoughts back to the UK. The Carrick-Smith boys were brought up in France, but many of our best Team GB talents learnt their skills here in the UK on the indoor slopes that I'm visiting in my challenge and on the many dry slopes we have around the country.
Now, there is currently a campaign to revive Sheffield Ski Village, so I spoke to Tim Justice, chairman of the Sheffield Shark Ski Club, to find out some more about it.
I'm delighted to be joined today by Tim Justice, who is chairman of the Sheffield Shark Ski Club and a local architect in Sheffield. Hi, Tim. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks.
Yeah. I really wanted to have you on the podcast because it's just over 13 years now since Sheffield Ski Village shut. And I believe the date is actually etched in your memory. Is that right?
It certainly is, yeah. It was the 29th of April when the fire started. I don't know quite how it started, and there's rumours still to this day of what happened there, but it was the 29th of April 2012.
Unfortunately, it's been out of action ever since, but Sheffield Ski Village has a huge, long history in British skiing. I've certainly been there and skied before and seen some amazing freestyle events going on there. And I think I read somewhere that it's produced historically six Olympians for
Team
GB.
Yeah. I can name them if you want me to, but...
Yes, please.
yeah, there was Ellie Coriander, who represented the... GB in Moguls, Peter Spate, James Machen, obviously Woodsy, and Molly and Katie Summerhays. They were all part of Shark Ski Club at some point.
Yeah, well, I know that the latter four, and I've interviewed them on the podcast before. And, you know, Sheffield just has this long connection with skiing. But unfortunately, the ski village itself has been out of action, as we said, for over a decade now. But the reason I have you back on the show is that there is a chance that it could come back together. Now, we had a chat in the green room earlier, and there's a couple of reasons for this, and I wondered if maybe you could elaborate. Part of it is to do with levelling up funds. There's been some money allocated that could be put towards a slope.
Yeah, I think it's something just that in excess of £19 million has been allocated to the council to basically clean up the site and make an attractive proposition to potential investors. Once they get their act together and start to invest and uplift the site, there are potential investors, and I'm currently working for one at this point in time in another site in the UK.
Right. Well, actually, that leads me on to my next question, because one of the reasons you've become involved in this project, apart from the fact that, you know, you skied at Sheffield for many years and, you know, I introduced you to the chairman of Sheffield Shark Ski Club. I think you might just be the Shark Ski Club now because you're forced to ski out of Sheffield.
Yeah. We've been nomadic for quite some time, but for the last, well, since COVID, we're now based solely at Swadling Coat, which is a great slope. We're still very much thriving, but... yeah, our heart still very much is in Sheffield.
And evidently you'd like to come back to Sheffield, and you referred to another possible investor, and that company is called Skyline Luge. Now, they're a New Zealand company. I think they have a whole bunch of different projects around the world. But in your role, a day-to-day job as an architect, you're currently working with them on a project in Swansea. And, you know, you believe that Sheffield could be a good project for them as well?
Yeah, they really are sort of like excited about the prospect of coming to Sheffield. They were, I mean, historically, we've been working with them on and off for a good 6 years now. And that includes prior to COVID, Sheffield was their number one target internationally. It was number one on the hit list. But things, as they always do, sort of develop in a different direction. And after COVID, Swansea became priority. We're lucky enough working with them as their sort of main architect on that project. That's a £50 million development, which is highly exciting. But following on from that, they wanted to look at further sites, and Sheffield is certainly more than just interest because they've got quite a lot of knowledge. And obviously, they've invested today on design work there prior to COVID.
Yeah. Okay. And so could you give us a sense for the timeline in terms of steps, how it might work from this point?
At this point, it's quite embryonic. They want to see the council make a statement by starting to clean up the site. At that point, it will give them confidence that they don't just say, right, we need this site, we are going to do A, B and C. It's a matter of, right, let's look at some of the opportunities, let's look at some of the options. And then it needs to go through a series of internal board accreditation before they can invest to the next day. So while I'd say, oh, it'd be great to give a deadline, or we could open in 5 years' time, it might maybe more, it may be less, it may never happen. But the process is... clean up the site, let's invest, let's look at some of the options. And I know they've done quite a lot of work so far today to put a loose track on there, because that's their fundamental business, that is priority. But they see cross-fertilisation of other activities across the site as essential to making that a success. And with the history of skiing, snowboarding, snow sports on that site, they're very keen that that would be an essential, fundamental part of any development that they bring to Sheffield.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that there would be demand there. Such a strong history there. As you mentioned, six Olympians have come out of Sheffield Ski Village. You know, the location is really good. The actual setup, and the reason it's called a ski village was, you know, it was one of the few places, one of the few dry slopes where you'd have a like a peace map, because you had different runs going down. It really was quite a great venue with moguls and a freestyle park as well.
I believe it was Europe's largest outdoor ski slope at the time.
Cool. Well, I very much hope that could come back again, and that you can, that maybe the Swansea project is a great success, and that Skyline Luge and yourself, and I know you have other colleagues in the Revive Sheffield Ski Village project. There's a great film, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, can bring it all together. Whether it takes 3 years or 5 years, hopefully less than the 13 since it closed down, we'll be definitely following it closely, and hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast.
That'd be superb.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Now, we have two guests with us today who have a huge amount of experience of skiing on UK dry slopes. And Kim's already told us she's based in Sheffield. I guess there's a decent chance that you skied at Sheffield Ski Village back in the day. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I was actually there when they did the opening weekend. And then I've since obviously moved to Sheffield. So I've been in Sheffield for like 15 years now. So that's where we got my husband's children into skiing. I remember even going up there one day when it snowed and we had a new snow day up there. So yeah, so I've kind of been getting behind the project really to try and support the revival of Sheffield Ski Village so that youngsters and people in Sheffield are not missing out on that opportunity to try snow sports.
Oh, and James, I know that you have a long history of ski racing on plastic around the UK. I've done that with you on a number of occasions. I'm guessing you must have raced at Sheffield Ski Village at some point.
Yeah, I think my main memory is probably the British University Dry Slope Championships, BUDS as it was then called. It may still be called, but that definitely took place at Sheffield a couple of times. And I think the memory I had is going to the top and it'd be the only dry slope I've ever been to that had a peace map at the top, right? With a red run and a blue run and a green run and possibly even the black from memory. But it certainly, I mean, it was a proper village. You know, you had choices of a route down, which is pretty unusual for a dry slope.
Yeah, well, it would be so good if it could come back. I mean, you know, evidently UK slopes are a great way of bringing people into snow sports. And actually, one of the reasons I wanted to ask you on this on the show for this episode is in your role at Ski Club of Great Britain, I noticed, I'm not sure if it's officially live yet or not, but a project that you're doing with Snow Sport England, which is called Way to Snow. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about that, because it's designed to bring people into snow sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, this it may be live today, otherwise it will be live very soon. But Way to Snow is a collaboration project. So being kind of coordinated by Snow Sport England, but very much driven by three of the UK's snow centres that you'll be visiting. So Tamworth Snowdome, the Hemel Snow Centre, and of course Chill Factory in Manchester, which is now run by the same guys that run Hemel. So those three centres have combined. The idea behind it really is twofold. So one is to have a very simple, consistent product that you can book across the UK. So whichever of those centres you go to, you're kind of getting, it's the same price and you're getting the same experience, if you like. So it kind of makes it really straightforward. And the concept behind Way to Snow is it's sort of inspired by the Couch to Mountain campaign that's been so successful at getting people into running. And what we wanted to do, and we, because the Ski Club is a partner in this, is we wanted to find a way of getting a really simple path, a way to snow, for people who've never done snow sports but wanted to try it for the first time. And I think, you know, we all know, if you remember when we learnt many years ago or when friends have learnt, you know, the tricky thing is it takes a few sessions, right? You know, you might catch the bug in your first time, in your first lesson, but mostly by the end of your first lesson, you're probably going to do 5 or 6 meters of straight running. You're not really going to get into the kind of the sensations of skiing or snowboarding and turning. So the idea of Way to Snow is that it's actually a series of lessons. So you're kind of booking onto a series of lessons. It's a course rather than a taste a day. And the idea being that by the end of that course, we will be main slope ready. So again, for anyone who's ever skied at any of those indoor snow centers, you know, they have a kind of minimum standard, right? Where if you want to go and ski on the main slope without having a lesson, you have to be main slope ready. So you have to be able to do a controlled turn. So the idea of Way to Snow is that people will come in, they'll pay one price, they'll get this course, and by the end of the course, they will be able to go and ski unaided, main slope ready, and then they can kind of take their skiing journey on from there.
Cool. So it's designed for beginners to learn how to ski and to move them on. And you mentioned they'll pay, you know, one cost. What is the cost and what are they getting for that?
So there's two costs, I believe, 249 and 299. One is a child price, one is an adult price. And for that, they get a course of lessons. I think it's 8 lessons. The detail will all be on the Snow Sport England site soon. But it's a course of lessons that, as I say, is designed to take them from never having put on a pair of skis or a snowboard up to being main slope ready. And if they're really struggling after those 8 sessions, then the centres will kind of, you know, within reason, will get them to the point where they can do that. So it's a sort of, you know, it's a guarantee that you can actually get to the point where you can link turns. And then beyond that, we also want to make sure that people can go from that to get out to the mountains and be able to go, you know, on a proper skiing or snowboarding holiday. So the partners include the likes of Crystal and Nielsen, who are offering special deals on holidays to get out there for the first time once you've completed the course. And also Snow and Rock and Ellis Brigham, who are offering discounts for participants so that they'll be able to, you know, get kit that they need before they go out. You'll get 3 months ski club membership as part of it. So this is all happening during the summer. So, you know, the idea is you can use those summer months when obviously the centres have more capacity to get you to the point of being main slope ready and being able to ski or snowboard. You'll get ski club membership during that time so that you'll be able to access all of the partnership benefits from the ski club. And then, yes, you know, what we really want people to do is to do this course. You'll also get a free ticket either to the London Snow Show or to Northern Snow up at Chill Factory, depending again on what's more convenient for you. So we really want to get people who've never skied or snowboarded, not only to a point where they can do it, but kind of really immerse them in this wonderful world that we all enjoy, and get them to the point where actually they can get out on snow and you know, become a mountain skier and become part of the world of snow sports.
Oh, I love this idea, and I like the way you're expressing it there, the kind of couch to mountain version of couch to 5K. Is it something, do you think, that skiers would recommend to their friends, or are you hoping to kind of hit people who haven't had any contact with skiing at all? And just around that, why do you think it's important? I mean, maybe it's self-evident, but why is it important to bring new people into the sport?
Yeah, so a little bit of both. There will be an advertising cam mostly across social media, obviously talking to being people who maybe have shown an interest in snow sports before. But also, yeah, if you've got friends or family who've never done it, you know, this is a really nice, simple way to go, look, you can book this course. It's the best value you're ever going to get. And that will take you all the way through to being kind of, you know, ready for snow sports. Why? Well, all of the research that we've done, and as you know, Ian, I love looking at data and understanding the market or the potential market a little bit more. And we've done some work in recent years looking at that. And there is a huge number of people, and I mean hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Brits, who express an interest in trying snow sports for the first time. You know, the kind of the latent market out there is really, really big. But one of the complexities is if you've never done it before, it's kind of, where do I start, right? Where do I get the kit? Do I go on a holiday? What do I do? And as we know, if we've been out with friends or family, you know, the first kind of 2 or 3 days of a snow sports holiday on snow can be quite difficult. You can be kind of on the beginner slope. It can be quite challenging with all the new equipment and everything to learn. So with this, you kind of get all of that done in the UK in a really nice, safe environment. You have all that support from the tour operators and the retailers that are helping you along, obviously from Snowsport England and obviously from the ski club. All that information and expertise is available. So by the time you book your first Snowsports holiday, you're kind of ready to go. You know a little bit more about it, and hopefully you'll have a much better experience. And of course, what we also know from the research is if you have a great experience on your first holiday, you are probably then in for the next, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And, you know, we do need more people in the industry. We're not growing the number of skiers from the UK at the moment. It's kind of recovered from where it was pre-COVID, but it hasn't grown. So, you know, we want to tap into that demand that is clearly there.
It makes sense as well. I think about bridging the gap, because you say, evidently, the research has shown that there's lots of people who are interested in taking a ski holiday, but maybe the commitment of going out to the Alps, you know, for your starting point, where you do have to, you know, shell out, even on a less expensive holiday, quite a lot of money. If you've already done all the basics in your couch to mountain in your local snow dome, and you know that you can ski down a slope already, you don't have to go through those basic steps. You know, you're already, let's say, a lower intermediate rather than a beginner. And we know that being a beginner is pretty tiring, you know. And I think also, when I think about your different bits of research that I've seen, the objections, and we'll come onto this when we have a discussion with Kim as well. But lots of people are kind of worried about injury, for example. You know, they think it's a dangerous sport. Maybe if they've tried it a little bit, they won't necessarily have those preconceptions in mind.
Yeah, and you know, the great thing about the centres is that they're also incredibly safe places to learn, but they're also very consistent, right? The other danger is you go out to the mountains and maybe your first couple of days, you know, the snow's variable, the weather closes in a bit, the wind is strong, all those kind of different things that can make learning really difficult. The great thing if you go to an indoor snow centre in the UK is every single day, every single time, it will be the same. So you take away one of those variables. And that means, of course, when you go out to the mountains, yes, you might still have those weather conditions or snow conditions. But if you've already got the basic skills, you can kind of cope with those much better. If your first ever experience of skiing is in a whiteout on poor snow up a mountain and you've never done it and you've never been to a mountain before, you're probably not going to have the best time. So just trying to kind of remove some of those, you know, those obstacles for a first time. ski or a snowboard.
Yeah, and I think also it's interesting. If listener, you're thinking, oh, well, I've got a friend, you know, who would enjoy doing this. One of the other great aspects about those indoor snow centres is they're cold in there. You really do, you know, get a sense of winter. I mean, it's not like you don't have to worry about a blizzard or anything like that. And you know, they have a kit, you know, clothing that you can wear, but it is cold. Kim.
Well, that actually fits in really well with the book that I wrote and illustrated, Ski A to Z, which is an illustrated introduction to skiing to help people that are new to the sport to be able to understand what to expect and to give them basic information to feel confident to be able to try snow sports.
Oh, I can put a link to that in the show notes. That sounds really interesting as well. James, I just want to come back to you because it would be remiss of me if we have you on the show without discussing the London Snow Show. You are the COO of the Ski Club of Great Britain, but you're also the organiser of the London Show. And we spoke about this back on episode 229, I think it was, back in December. But for listeners who might have missed that, I wonder if you could just tell us where and when that show will be and how preparations are going. I mean, we spoke in December. It was all incredibly new. You'd only just taken over the rights to the show from the previous organisers. So now I imagine you're deep in sales and, you know, finalising things.
Yeah, it's quite busy here, I think would be the way I would describe it. So, but yes, everything is going really well. So the show is going back to Olympia. So I'm sure you've got listeners who would have attended the snow shows back in the day. I think the last show in Olympia was in 2010, so 15 years ago. But the snow show is going back to Olympia 18th and 19th of October. So very similar dates to last year and back in the National Hall at Olympia. And it's going very well. I mean, obviously, I don't have a kind of a, you know, a benchmark because I've never run the snow show before. But I feel very happy with where we are. We've had a great response. I think particularly to the move back to Olympia. I think, you know, there's lots of nostalgia about Olympia, but also I think lots of people feel that it is a great home for the snow show. You've got, you know, Kensington High Street with Snow & Rock and Ellis Brigham and other retailers down there. You've got a lot of other independent ski stores around that area and still some tour operators. So it does feel like the right part of London. Olympia's going through this big multi-billion pound refurbishment at the moment, so that the centre itself and the halls are looking better than ever. And we've got a great kind of roster of people coming back. So we've got lots of returning exhibitors that people will know from recent shows. So people like the Ski Club, of course, Norway Home of Skiing have just come back. We've got St Anton and Ertsdale coming from Austria. We've got the Icon Pass Village coming back again. And then lots of new exhibitors as well. So some visitors from Atlantic Canada, Cape Smoky and Marble Mountain from the east coast of Canada are coming as resorts. Lots of other retailers coming as well. And we've sort of zoned the show a little bit more this year. So we've got kind of different areas of the show for different things. So we've got the Alpine Stroll retail area, which is designed for kind of, you know, small retailers to come along and be part of a kind of bigger event. We've still got the Main Mountain Theatre downstairs. And we've also got the Après Ski Bar, where we'll have Après Ski bands playing. So bands that play in the Alps will be coming. And then upstairs, two new areas. We've got the fitness and wellness zone, which is really geared around kind of injury prevention, getting fit for skiing. Again, we know from our research that this is a really big area for skiers, kind of how do I get fit? How do I prevent injury? How do I go skiing again when I'm needing to recover from injury? So we've got some really good speakers coming along in that area, and we're going to have live yoga classes and live fitness classes in that area. And the other end, we've got the equipment and instruction theatre. And I know that you are hopefully going to be a part of that.
Off a podcast, we've been discussing this, and I certainly, you know, I've been involved at the ski show pretty much every year, I don't know for how long, either exhibiting or organising different events. And for sure, this year, listeners, if you listened to our last episode, we had our equipment expert, Al Morgan, on, and Al and I will be doing a little bit of work in the equipment area at the show. Also be talking a little bit about EVs and how you can use them to get to the Alps, and possibly about my Mount Etna trip. But something that you said there that really sparked my interest, James, was the après ski side of things. It's felt in the last few years that hasn't XL, the NEC, they're big exhibition venues that don't have much of an atmosphere, and it was hard to create them in a massive hall. Something about Olympia, I don't know how much of the changes they've made inside, but I know the layout in there, and previously, you know, the après ski side of things, having bands playing would just add so much more to it. So I'm interested in that. I'm also interested in, we extend the closing time, because, you know, back in the day, I think it used to stay open till quite late. You know, will it be closing at 5 or 6 still? Or is the après? Is it afternoon après or is it evening après?
It is afternoon après for this year. The opening times are very similar to last year. So I think 10 till 5 on Saturday, 10 till 4 on Sunday. We definitely want to look in future years about whether we could have a kind of evening element to it. As you say, Ian, that was always a really popular part of it. First year, didn't want to kind of try and do too much in the first year. So that's where we're looking at that. But there will be live bands playing. We're also trying to make that bar area just feel like more of a more of an Alpine bar. So we're talking to a couple of the famous names in the Alps to kind of go, can we recreate? So it's a bar with a name that you recognize, bring over some of the bar staff that work in those bars in the Alps. So again, you know, they understand the kind of vibe of an après ski bar. You know, as much as possible, the idea of a snowshoe is we want to create at least that feeling of a ski resort in West London. And as you say, Olympia lends itself better to that. You've got the balcony area, you've got the glass roof. It's still an exhibition hall, but it definitely has some more atmosphere to it. So kind of that's our challenge. And again, you know, some great conversations with bar owners in the Alps about how we kind of do that and make that happen.
Cool. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that. You know, that will be really good. I wonder now if I could just turn back to Kim, if that's okay. Kim, you were last on the show in episode 229, and today's conversation is going to cross over with that. But I was interested to have you back on the show, as you've just been to the inaugural World Women's Snow Sports Organization, WWSO Summit in Kaprun. You mentioned you were there, and it sounded really interesting to me. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about it. We already know where it was, but you know, when was it and who was there?
Yeah, so it was the 21st to 26th of April. It was in Kaprun, Austria, and Dr. Carol Porter and I were invited to share our research findings from our FEAR project, which we previously talked about on the podcast. And basically, it was top female coaches, instructors, snow industry personnel. We met for on-snow clinics. There was networking over the meal times. There was conference sessions in the after skiing. It was sharing experience, sharing expertise, fostering community, looking at women in snow sports, women's issues in the snow sports industry. And it was a real opportunity for collaboration, for sharing solutions, for initiating change. It was an awesome event. Yeah, it was just magic to be there. And the conversations, the quality of the conversations for the whole week was just fantastic. So thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, and you know, this is international. There are people representing countries from across the world, right?
Yeah, there were people from 12 countries. It was 54 women from 12 countries meeting. And like there were the people who run Hungarian snow sports, the people, the top person from Finnish ski schools. We also had Carve 2 were there offering a test. One of the things that they wanted to do was to get female snow sports data, more data for the analytics of Carve 2. We also did a Blizzard factory tour. So we were looking at how skis are constructed, because some of the founders of the World Women's Snow Sports Organization are involved with the design of women's skis through Blizzard. Yeah, and the on-snow experience was awesome, you know, working with coaches. One highlight for me was with Professional Ski Instructors Canada coach, because I did some illustrations for their e-learning package for their new instructors. And it was just a really international event, bringing people together. I mean, I always grew up being one of a very few women or girls that were skiing with hundreds of guys, and there might be like 8 women, 8 girls. So I'd never been on a trip that was all women skiing together. I just didn't know what to expect, but it was fantastic. And there was a great response to our research findings. There's a lot of collaboration and an opportunity for future projects along those lines.
And so this is the first ever Women's Snow Sports Summit. Who put it together then? Who are the people behind it?
So there's 8 founders that have come together. They're very much change makers. Like some of them are like ex-US demo team skiers, top race coaches for ex, and maybe present US ski team coaches. Basically, they'd had this idea to support women in snow sports. So really trying to support women but not just not just young women, but in it to be able to empower women to be able to stay within snow sports as they become mums, and you know, and sort of kind of through their lives. I mean, some of the people they're there, they're like the lady who runs the Hungarian snow sports organization. She's also a lawyer. There's a lot of people that are having to do other jobs in order to be able to still be involved in snow sports because, you know, there was issues around pay, opportunities, you know, how sometimes women can be more sort of steered towards teaching children rather than maybe kind of more mainstream. So there was all these different issues. It was just a fantastic to be able to have these conversations, to have this engagement. It was really inspiring.
Oh, it sounds a really interesting. It's sort of topics that we've covered on the podcast before. Certainly when I've interviewed Shemi, she's discussed the issues of, you know, being a mum and skiing and the extra responsibilities and the concern that women drop out of skiing, you know, earlier than men. And that's something we'll come on to in a minute. But also Nicole from Ski Moms, I'll put a link to that episode in there. They did some really good research about what mums are looking from ski resorts, and you know that seems to be making a difference as well. So increasing research and awareness. So thinking about research, you were presenting your research. We covered that in episode 229, Project Fear. Do you want to just give listeners a reminder, if they didn't listen to that episode, what that research was about and what you found?
Yeah, so I worked with Dr. Carol Porter, who's a level 4 ski instructor with Snow Sport England, based at the Hill in Rossendale. And so basically we felt that, you know, we wanted to understand why women were disengaging, why women were, you know, kind of sort of stopping participating. And James kindly helped us with some data around that. And it was possible to see that women dropped off much quicker than their male counterparts. And we had a hunch that fear and anxiety around snow sports might be a factor in this. So we thought we'd better, you know, kind of find out the facts. So we did, through my social media channels, we invited people to complete a questionnaire. And the key findings of that were basically that fear of injury and re-injury and other skiers perceived to be too fast, potentially not in skiing in control, and too close to them were key factors in women, in affecting women's enjoyment and participation of snow sports.
Yeah, I mean, when you were last on, we discussed, you know, ski etiquette and how some people are kind of completely unaware of the rules of the piste. The fear of other people skiing too fast and bailing into you is not just restricted to women. There's plenty of men out there who would be concerned about that as well. And I think, you know, one of the key issues is increasing that awareness amongst skiers of what the rules of the piste are.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we found as well is that when we open this conversation up with women, you know, in social settings, talking about fear and anxiety around snow sports, the men start to join the conversation. And the problem is that if people are biting down and sort of and not vocalising their fears and issues, which often were based on their experiences of either seeing or being involved in an incident, then obviously instructors and coaches can't deal with the nub of their issues if people are not being open about them. And so that's really key. But as you say, people understanding and from the start of their ski experience, understanding about etiquette, about the principles. And obviously we spoke last time along with Peace Cross Code. And I think sometimes these things are probably best maybe addressed prior to going on the snow, so that people are fully focused and can see visual aids to help to communicate, you know, what the codes are and the etiquette and what their responsibility is to not be a problem to other people.
Yeah, I think, you know, all of those points are extremely valid. And what you're talking about there, women stopping skiing at a younger age, is definitely a concern. Certainly something that, you know, Shemi has mentioned in previous interviews, that, you know, women tend to put everyone else in the family first. You know, they're getting the kids ready to get out on the slopes, and they're putting themselves last. And yeah, there are various, you know, women only camps elsewhere. I can't speak from experience, but my understanding is that, you know, extremely effective environments for being able to you know, relax more, learn more, an environment where you don't have those extraneous pressures on you.
Yeah, and I think another thing is women's caring roles. Like when I went out to Austria and I was skiing on the glacier, I've been supporting my parents. My dad had a heart attack in January. And he's been diagnosed with heart failure. And I've been very much, and it was literally, that's because it was a work trip, I was able to justify being able, you know, and taking this wonderful opportunity. But I was very conscious when I was skiing of, you know, I mustn't hurt myself because they're relying on me. And so it's the kind of, you know, it's parents and care roles that women also are involved in, which also can be that pressure. Some people have got both their children and their parents that they're conscious, you know, and it's all this around them. And I think being aware that that person in front of you is not just a skier. They are a person. They have people that depend on them, you know, and to just give each other space and let's not be a problem to everybody else.
Oh, yeah, well, I think we'd all vote in favour of that. What I will do is I'll put a link into the show notes so listeners can find out a little bit more about your research. And thanks very much for sharing that and the information about the World Women's Snow Sport Summit as well.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention that we've developed, as one of the things that's come out of the FEAR project is with Panda Optics, we've developed a snow code card, a pocket card, which basically has just got the 10 points on to be an aid memoir. And it's something that's going to be going out in the with the children's goggle boxes. It's going to be inside the goggle boxes next season with Panda Optic. So thanks to them for this, for supporting this and you know, hoping to gradually chip away and make more people aware of the code and responsibilities and slope etiquette.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like an interesting idea. We're just going to move on to feedback now. I always enjoy listener feedback. We've had a couple of comments on our how-to kit episode that I did with equipment expert Al Morgan. Gordy Mission 1035, I guess that was on YouTube perhaps, said, thanks for a great episode, so much great info. Skiing Posting on Spotify said, Al and I were discussing the right or wrong way of carrying skis. He said at Hemel, we were taught Al's second ski carrying technique, so not to take someone's head off, and maybe perhaps for beginners that might be the way to start. So if you have any feedback, now, please do let me know. You can contact me via all our social channels at Ski Podcast or by email theskipodcast@gmail.com. There are now 260 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. 132 of those were listened to in the last week. So if you're missing your skiing over the summer, this is the perfect time to go to theskipodcast.com and have a look around our back catalogue. I was actually reminded of one of them when you were speaking there, Kim, because you mentioned that you went to go and see how women's skis specifically were designed. I interviewed Bodie Miller, and you can find that in our back catalogue. His skis, Peak Skis, don't have a women's line. And he has this great quote where he says, well, the skis can't tell who's skiing on them. So, you know, in my experience, that's not going to make a difference. Just in relation to the back catalogue, a couple of other favourites for my favourites from last winter that you might want to catch up with if you miss them was my trip to Mount Etna in 239, going east, where I interviewed some professional skiers from Arc'teryx who took the train all the way from Europe over to Turkey. That's 243. And Ed Lee from Ski Sunday, 236. And one that you might have missed, my interview with John Yates Smith. That's episode 231. If you haven't listened to that, I strongly recommend it. He is a very, very entertaining guy, and he's just finished his 50th ski season in Val d'Isère in a row. There is no one like that anywhere. In the last week, around half of our listeners were in the UK, about 20% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Indonesia, Brazil and Turkey. If you like the podcast, normally I'd ask you to give us a review or maybe to follow us or possibly to buy me a coffee. But this week, all I ask is that you consider sponsoring my 25 and 25 Snowcamp Challenge. The link is in the show notes. Any amount, no matter how small, will help make a difference. Now, you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at Ski Podcast. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. So look in the show notes for that link. I'd like to thank my guest today. Kim, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been great to be here, and I hope that your charity challenge goes well. I've skied them all, but never all in one day. I think it's quite ambitious what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. And James, thanks very much.
Thank you, Ian. Great to be back. And yes, best of luck. And I bet you're secretly quite pleased there's no Glasgow Slope anymore.
Yeah, there's no way it would have happened if that was the case. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.